You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 22nd of November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, I'm talking, I want to touch on that speculation about a takeover from AVI, same week that we saw Distell get the 180 Rand offer from Heineken. And then results, Pepkor talking results there. Lower LSM retailers are doing very well. We saw it in ShopRite last week. We see it in those Pepkor numbers. And then Tiger Brands. They've had some issues, some of their own, most namely the recall. But of course, those rights also have been hurting profits. But they're cutting costs. They're getting their core cost base down. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. ITAC opens door for new anti-dumping duties to protect local frozen chip productions. It's actually a fascinating story. International Trade Administration Commission, that's ITAC, is investigating dumping of frozen chips from Belgium, Netherlands, and also Germany into the SA market. Business Day, the NPA hopes to wrap up Tongaat investigation early next year. And CEO Gavin Hudson, and so obviously the current Tongaat CEO, says civil cases against former executives are still in the hands of lawyers. Morning markets, US was mixed on Friday. We had the S&P off down about a sixth of a percent. NASDAQ was up nicely, 0.4% higher. Another new all-time closing high for NASDAQ. Asia's red. We got Sydney off 0.4 of a percent. Tokyo off 0.2. Commodities mostly red over the weekend. Gold, 1,847. Brent moving a fair bit stronger at 78.67. Sorry, it's a fair bit weaker as reports that the US wants Japan to release stockpiles. Palladium, 2,057. Rand, 1574. Top 40 opening call, about 120 points up. That is 0.2%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Muyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned it in the intro there. Rumors, and I stress it's rumors, we haven't had an official sense notification from AVI of a potential offer for the company coming from American Mondelez. We saw Distell being delisted, Pioneer more recently as well. This is a trend, and I look at it and think, are we as South African investors then missing a trick if our foreigners seem to like and be prepared to pay a lot more for companies that trade on our exchange?
Morning, Simon. I think that's part of it. I mean, if you look at the examples you mentioned, it's not just Distell, it's not just AVI. I mean, we know Pioneer Foods delisted after PepsiCo. RB Platts was also looking to, there was a rumor around that when the Implats conversation was still there. This was before the Northam conversation was in the picture, of course. I mean, there's various reasons why companies sort of do this sort of thing. And one of them is definitely what you said around the fact that as local investors, once you've listed on the JSE, the expectation is then that you'll raise capital through institutional investments primarily, but also that you'll have enough people or enough retail investors interested in your stock to form or provide some form of liquidity of your stock. Now, in the case of companies like Alaris as well and CSG, where after listing, your liquidity on the JSE is so low that it actually isn't beneficial for you to remain listed because there aren't enough people trading in your stock. Now, that speaks to a variety of issues that can cause that, but also the resulting factors from there. I mean, you'll see that as a result of that, people then or companies will then elect to delist because, of course, there's costs that come with listing. There's costs that come with maintaining your listing. There's reporting requirements and a whole list of other things that are as a result of you being a publicly listed stock. Whereas big international companies come in and say, okay, we'll buy you out, we'll delist, we'll streamline everything. It'll cost us less to actually have you delisted and manage it as a private company? And at the end of the day, there isn't enough public interest in the company at this stage already. I mean, we've seen a lot of the public has also flooded towards your more popular stocks, your Prosus, your Naspers, your BHPs, and those sorts of things. Now, that while that is great and everything, what it does also create is a bit of a concentration risk, because the main delistings, I mean, I think we've had 20-plus delistings in this year alone, and majority of those have been mid-caps. So your smaller mid-cap companies and that sort of thing on the lower end of the sort of scale are the ones that are delisting because it's just not financially beneficial, or the benefits don't really justify the cost and the effort that go into this, right? But then now what you're going to have is we've already had a problem where something like Naspers was 16% of our top 40s weighting. And now that concentration and that weighting is only going to skew further in a direction like that, because you've got the same sort of all the capitals flowing towards the same sort of direction, and there aren't too many players on there. I mean, we could find years from now that if this is an extreme case, we could find that we sit with a situation where we're no longer the top 40 because there aren't enough stocks that actually make it up. But I think that's still a long way away from now.
We used to have a Resi 20, now we have a Resi 10. I take your point. I like that point about the mega caps, and they will just then dominate even more. And of course, we've seen a raft of smaller mids. And to contrast it, Australia's had almost, I think, 200 new listings coming onto the market this year, and we're just going the other way. And I think we're missing tricks as investors. We'll leave it there. That's Jimmy Muyaha, independent analyst. Appreciate your early morning time, sir.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Pepco CEO Leon Lawrence. Results out for year-end September. Revenue up 9.2%. Headline earnings up 115.2%. Final dividend of 44.2 cents. Market share gains. New stores coming in. Leon, I appreciate the time today. I want to start with inventory levels up by 11.3%, which jumped out at me. But I suspect that that's probably more than anything a low base from September 2020 when we were in the thick of pandemic.
Yes, Simon, you're 100% correct. A year ago, we said that our inventory levels was actually a bit low because of the sort of huge demand, to an extent, unexpected huge demand that we had.
Mm-hmm.
It's normalizing now. It could probably have been even slightly higher than that, you know, if the supply chain worked perfectly. So we do have supply chain issues at the moment, as the world has. But we're quite satisfied with where the inventory levels are at the moment.
Yeah, and I take your point on supply chains. You're also looking at, you opened 247 new stores during the period, another 300 planned. What brands are you focusing on with new store openings?
Yeah, most of it is still in the top brand. And Ackermans are the sort of most profitable and most robust brands that we have. And in the next year, where we say we'll open 300, about 200 of them will be Pep and Ackermans.
Okay. So
there will be a sort of equal distribution between the rest of the brands, but Pep and Ackermans still the sort of driving force.
Are you changing the stores in terms of perhaps size or layout or even location? And the reason I ask is a lot of retailers are saying they're seeing different shopping patterns from customers, but I'm suspecting that that's more QSR, that's more food retail. I'm not so sure that perhaps if your customer has changed their shopping pattern.
Yeah, shopping patterns have changed a bit, but that was mainly because of COVID and the restrictions in the market. So, but people shop closer to home rather than going to shopping centers, etc. Now that might sort of reverse over time. But we're fortunate in that sense that our stores are really close to our customers. We operate smaller type stores, which you can take to the sort of rural areas as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, from that point of view, it actually suits Pepkor or most of the Pepkor brands.
And you mentioned the network. I mean, one of the, your Paxi parcel distribution, which I stumbled across last week when someone sent me a parcel. You're now doing what? You did 3.5 million parcels. You've got distribution at what? 2,800 stores. You really have created a product there, and not dismissively, but almost out of nothing, which is doing in incredibly well and utilizing your existing infrastructure.
That's exactly it. You know, we're leveraging our footprint and, as you say, 2,800 drop-off points. It's a fantastic, you know, one of the core assets of our business is the distribution network, and we're leveraging that. And I'm happy to say that the Paxi concept has been extremely successful. I'm glad you've experienced it. And it's regarded like that by many. You know, we do more than, well, just about 10,000 parcels a day now.
Wow.
They're probably going to increase still, and we're still working on improving and expanding that concept even more. And it's profitable, very profitable.
Okay, because that was going to be my next question. Because, I mean, in essence, it's almost sort of stepping into the void left by our post office. Another newish brand for you is Pep Home. And there's one I haven't experienced, but I reached out on Twitter, and my Twitter followers who have say it's absolutely excellent quality, amazing prices, and doing very, very well for yourself.
Yeah, Pep Home is, it's actually been in existence for more than 10 years, probably 12 years now. So it wasn't immediate success. Like many of these new concepts, you know, there's a lot of experimenting until you find the right sort of recipe for the business model. We've got Pep Home perfect now, I believe. It's got almost like a cult following from many people, as you would have noticed. And it's really been successful, and we're still expanding, or we'll keep on expanding the business at about 40, 45 stores a year. I think they planned this year. So it's a great model, and it's been accepted by not only the sort of lower end of the market, but even sort of higher ends of the market, surprisingly. On social media, it's got almost a cult following.
No, it absolutely has. And that was the comment that came to me, is that it's like your competitors' stores in terms of product and range and quality, but it's Pep Ackerman pricing. Last question. The building company sale was blocked during the course of the year. Are you actively looking for another buyer, or is it a case of it got blocked and it's carry on doing as you were before?
No, we've decided not to have it in the market anymore, you know, so we'll hang on to it. You know, that whole process of selling it took such a long time with Competition Commission that, you know, we probably might have made a different decision if we had known that anyway. It's been very successful, Simon, as you would see from the results, you know. So all the work that we've put in over time has sort of come to fruition, and maybe it's a blessing in disguise that the sale didn't go through.
Yeah, take your point on that. We'll leave it there. Pepkor CEO Leon Lawrence talking numbers to you in September. Appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm trading with Noel Doyle, CEO of Tiger Brands. Results to year-end September, revenue up 4%, headline earnings per share down 6%, a dividend, R5.06. That takes full-year dividend to R8.26. Noel, appreciate the time. In your presentation slide this morning, you had a particular slide looking at the impact of civil unrest and the product recall. And it is marked. Headline earnings would have been 14.45 instead of 11.27. Operating margin was down 2.3%. Operating income of 800 million. Is that now completely behind you? You can draw a line underneath it. And it was a tough situation, but it's done.
Yes, very much so, Simon. You know, that would swing the -6 to a +20 in terms of HEPS. But, you know, one obviously can't wash it away. There's a very significant impact, but it is behind us. And hopefully what lies ahead of us in respect of those matters, you know, clearly we've lodged insurance claims in respect of the damage with the civil unrest and the looting, and we're engaged in discussions with our supplier in respect of the cans recall, you know, where we would expect to make some recovery. So hopefully on those two matters, there'll be some recoupment as we move forward.
Another issue is input costs. I see wheat prices, maize, still deeply elevated.
Yeah, Simon, I think if you look at our numbers and you look at our level of inflation already to the end of September in the region of 7%, and the fact that we didn't recover all of that at a naked margin level, it tells you kind of, you know, what inflation we had up until we've now sort of seen this emerging, you know, global post-COVID supply chain reset. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to see further cost push. A weakening currency obviously doesn't help. But it's not just in the soft commodity. You know, the logistics costs of shipping, you know, which is a significant component of some of our costs around, you know, packaging and some of our commodities, you know, those are multiples. They're not increasing by a percentage. They're increasing by multiples, 3 to 4 times what they were a year ago. So I think that's our concern, you know, mostly beyond Christmas. You know, most big manufacturers like us, we have a little bit of cover. Retailers don't like to take price increases in the run-up to Christmas because they've kind of settled their promotional calendar. So I think that the SA consumer is going to feel the inflation more strongly post-Christmas. I think there's a bit of, if you like, pent-up inflation coming.
Another point which I actually hadn't thought of, and you make mention of this in snacks and treats, where you do promotional activity, you're doing discounts in the at store level. So take a small hit there on your margin and your revenue, but actually improves factory efficiencies, and you benefit from those increased volumes via better factories.
That's right. And that's what, you know, we've managed to do with the volumes that we've had and the efficiencies, is to try and not have to pass all of that cost push through directly to the consumer, be able to absorb some of it with those efficiencies. You know, the challenge with promotional pricing in FMCG, however, is that our shoppers get addicted to it, and that they tend to say, well, if I wait a little bit longer, one of the retailers will have a big promotion on Jungle, and then they go and pantry load. So it can sometimes be the thin end of a very thick wedge. So our challenge has been for the past year, and I think in a couple of our categories we've done it quite well, is to look at what promotions really work for us and the consumer and do more of those, and obviously not promote where we're not seeing a benefit. You know, what you really want is a promotion that drives consumption rather than a promotion that drives what we call pantry loading, because effectively you've taken out higher margin sales by doing that promotion. So you get a short-term gain, but in the long run, you end up with a lower average price. So for us, our desire is to do promotions that will stimulate the almost instant gratification that people will buy something they wouldn't have otherwise and use it or eat it.
Pantry loading, I like that. I hadn't heard that phrase before. It's something else you've been working on is your base costs and bringing that down. And you've made some good progress in that space.
Yeah, look, it's in these periods of high inflation, and as a premium brand manufacturer in an economy that's quite tough, Simon, we've got to try and get our price points as close as possible to, you know, be, you know, I'm going to borrow from another competitor of ours, within an arm's reach of desire for our products. So that's why it's really important for us that we turn over every single cent, look for every piece of efficiency. So we've been working hard on that. I think every company like ours does that. It you can save yourself to prosperity, but it can certainly make a contribution to prosperity.
We'll leave that there. Tiger Brands results to year-end September. Chatting to the CEO, Noel Doyle. Appreciate the time today. That's the show, and that's our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. Do you do pantry hoarding? I hadn't heard the phrase before. It makes perfect sense. Something's on discount, so you go and buy as much as you possibly can store. Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter accounts. Our question from Friday, we'd been chatting with her, Blessing Utete from Old Mutual, around the two-pot retirement idea. You could perhaps potentially draw some cash early from retirement. Question we asked is, would you? A fifth of you said, yep, things are tough. And then evenly split between the rest, more or less, 40-odd percent saying yes to avoid Regulation 28, with about just over 40% saying, nope, you would leave it in its pension account. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokle, Nicole, Masekla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.